today on Richard Ellis Talks.
Wherever there are newborn babies, there's going to be mess. There's going to be diapers to change, and that's just the deal. So they're sweeping, they're shoveling, there's problems, and there is more on the way. And God, help us keep our eyes and ears open and welcome those people and say, you know what? We're a mess. We were a mess, but God's changing us. If he can change me, he can change you. Bring it on.
You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Here we are in May already as schools are getting ready to finish the school year and summer vacations are being planned. But at the same time, there are many right now who feel like their train came off the tracks. They're shooting up the prayer flares and hoping God is listening. And maybe that's you who's calling out, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. That's where we come in. We want to be that safe place of hope and encouragement to you. I'll share more for you at the end of the program, but for now, let's jump right in with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Cribs. Now, if you've watched any TV at all, MTV in particular, you know there happens to be a show on MTV, has been for quite a while, called Cribs. You have to say it kind of right, and I'm not sure I can. And they basically show celebrity homes. They're usually elaborate, elegant, exotic, extravagant. You know, one show's got Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal's house, just this monstrosity, basketball, full-on basketball court, part of the house, a guest house that'd be nice for any of us to live in. A bed, and I'm thinking this bed was like 30 or 40 feet across. It's round with a Superman bedspread on it. It's just massive. I mean, you could get a couple of families on it at least. Snoop Dogg's house, Rod Stewart's house is part of it. A whopping 23,500 square feet, 11 bedrooms, 15 bathrooms. Missy Elliott, I think Missy Elliott's bed is a Ferrari. It's a real Ferrari body. Ferrari made it for her, and the inside of the body is her bed. So she gets in a Ferrari at night to sleep. And it goes on. There's rap artists, basketball players, just a little bit of everybody if you watch the show. Now, a real crib, if you go back even farther than MTV, a crib in certain cultures was a little room where basically it had a bed, a basin, and it was a place where a prostitute did her work. So that's where the crib comes from. Maybe y'all didn't know that. Then it gets taken over, and certain culture calls crib a place you live. And in our case, we associate it, if you associate MTV with it at all, a crib is a pretty nice place. What kind of crib you got? Now, even in the Bible, if you go back in the Old Testament, where it all began, if anybody had a crib and screwed it up, it was Adam and Eve. I mean, you talk about a perfect crib. They had God walking with them in the cool of the day. Everything's perfect, no sin, exactly the way God intended. A place to live and exist. And if you know the story, you read the story, they got thrown out of this crib, this garden, this perfect place over what? Sin. And it has screwed it up for everybody ever since then. Beyond them, some actual pretty amazing cribs. You can go into 1 Kings. And one of the greatest cribs for anybody on the planet was for God himself. David wanted to build it. Solomon was able to build it and built God this house. And if you read the story of it, and I'm not going to go into all this today, but the description of it, what was supposed to happen in part of this house for God, the stones, the masonry that was done for the stones had to be exactly cut and perfected outside of the location. There was no hammering. There was no chiseling. The construction site for God's crib on the planet was absolutely silent. There was reverence even in the construction. So when a stone came in, it came in, there was no sound, it got put into place, it fit exactly, and God's crib, God's house got put together one deal at a time. The wood was put down, then this thing started getting overlaid with gold. You want to talk about gaudy and elaborate and elegant and extravagant. As far as places on the planet, God's house was that. Now, some people, parenthetically, try to take that and say, well, we're going to build God a temple on this side in the New Testament. And so millions and millions of dollars are spent on architecture. We got some architects here. I'm not against architecture and architects. There's some beautiful buildings and some beautiful buildings that we call churches. Now, we call them churches, but you know what? By the definition of what a church is, as we go over it over around here, it is impossible biblically to go to church. And one of the things that throws people about the way we do church is we're in just some building, a convention center. And people come in and go, well, it's not a church. It may be more of a church than you've ever been in. Because church is not a place, it is a people. And although, I mean, you can go through Europe, you can go through Russia, you can go through places on the planet, and they have some beautiful, quote-unquote, church buildings. You know what? They're dead. They're empty. Because there's nobody in it. And we are the church. We make up the church. So in the Old Testament, God had this house, this crib. In the New Testament, where is his house? We are the cribs, where God takes up his residence. And we ought to be beautiful on the inside, in a spiritual sense. We ought to be extravagant, elaborate, holy. We ought to be this place that as God moved into the temple in the Old Testament, when he moves in us, he says, you know, I'm going to clean it up, but let's clean it up and get it clean. I'm going to stay here. I'm never going to leave. This is where I'm going to live. Talking about David. David had quite a palace. Solomon, you can read there in 1 Kings as well, those first few chapters. In fact, go to Ecclesiastes with me in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Now, I understand you say, what the heck is Ecclesiastes? If you don't even have a Bible, look around, make sure everybody's got a Bible that wants one. If you've got an extra slide down the aisle there, show them. Look in the table of contents. It's ECC. It'll be pretty, there's not another Ecclesiastes in there. So, Old Testament, find the page number, go to that page. It's chapter 2. And verse 4, and this is Solomon, who built God a crib, built himself a few cribs. I mean, he had one in town, one out of town. You know, say, well, there's my justification. Well, as soon as somebody declares you a king of Israel, we'll let you go with that. But anyhow, Ecclesiastes 2, 4. Now look at how he describes, Solomon describing all that he built, all that he had. He said, I made my works great. I built myself houses, not just one house, houses, and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. He had so many servants, they were multiplying, literally having babies in his house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers. I mean, he had full-time bands, the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And look at verse 10. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. What if you had so much money that if you walked into any store, said, I'll take it, ship it to my house. And if you ran out of house, if your crib got too little, you just built another crib and kept filling cribs. Whatever he wanted. Now, he was supposedly wise still, but whatever he wanted, he could have. Now, does that work? Did that work? And when I watch cribs every once in a while, I watch these people and I think, okay, God, what's going on here? And they've got they got the Playboy Mansion, the grotto, and all these beautiful things that happen at the Playboy Mansion where people's lives are destroyed and people are taken advantage of. You say, well, no, don't say that. It's a beautiful place. You know what? It's a waste. You talk about the parties, things that go on. You get away from that. Let me tell you something. Having sex with a bunch of people in a pool someplace, you get away and want to tell all your buddies about how wonderful that was. At some point, I end up in the room with those conversations about the shame, and it's not a beautiful thing, and they feel dirty, and it was fun, but it wasn't fun. It's not fun anymore. And you watch these homes, and they've got everything, and then they'll overdose on something and take their life. And you think, well, if this is it, and Solomon was in this deal, he had hundreds of wives, hundreds of concubines. Sex wasn't the problem. Possessions weren't the problem. But look how he closes out these verses. Verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Vanity just like evaporates. Whatever pleasure, whatever gain he felt from all this, it meant nothing in the end. Go over to Isaiah chapter 1. Show you another place where a crib is mentioned in the Bible. Different kind of crib, but getting closer to where we're going. In the Bible, a real crib is defined in the Old Testament as a crib, a manger, or a feeding trough. It was where they put the food, just a feeding trough. It's simple. You put the grain or the feed in there, and the cows, the animals would come eat out of it. In Isaiah 1:3, this is what it says. The ox knows its owner, and the donkey its master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people do not consider. And I found a story out of the World Christian Digest. A Haifa policeman who knew his Bible got on the trail of a gang of smugglers. They used a donkey-drawn caravan to escape. The policeman managed to capture some of the donkeys, though the smugglers got away. The clever officer let the beasts of burden go without food for several days, and then he turned them loose. And just as he predicted from Isaiah 1:3, the ox knows his owner and the donkey his master's crib, the starving animals led the police directly to the smugglers' hideout. They got hungry and they went home. Now let me read it to you again. The ox knows its owners and the donkey its master's crib. But Israel does not know, my people do not consider. Even a donkey, as stubborn and bullheaded as it is, when it's time to go home, when he gets hungry, he knows where to go and when to go and how to get there. And God was frustrated with his own people because they couldn't find the crib, his crib, the place where they belong. And Psalms talks about him being our dwelling place. Go to Proverbs 14:4. Proverbs 14:4 says this. Where no oxen are, the trough or the crib is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of an ox. Matthew Henry in his commentary says this, where no oxen are, there is nothing to be done at the ground, and then nothing to be had out of it. The crib indeed is clean from dung, which pleases the neat and nice that cannot endure husbandry because there is so much dirty work in it and therefore will sell their oxen to keep the crib clean, but then not only the labor, but even the dung of the ox is wanted. Now, what is he talking about here in Proverbs? What does this mean? Where no oxen are, the trough is clean. If you don't have oxen, you don't have a mess. What do oxen do? I mean, they put dung, waste, you know, it's messy. But if you don't have oxen, then you don't have work. You don't have a field to plow. You have nothing to do. So if there's nothing to do, you say, wow, let's be nice and neat. Let's get rid of the worker. Let's get rid of the oxen so we don't have any more messes. In a church category, it is all about messes. You can't be plowing fields and reaching people and not have some mess. And if there's no mess, it's not church. Now, I had a twilight zone, and my wife, it's even more bizarre for her. We went to drop off one of the girls at some party, birthday party. We're not normally this part of town. I won't even tell you the street, but I will tell you the name of this place. We go by, and maybe you know this by now, but my wife is a thrift store person, okay? And she was on a hunt, and maybe you'll find out later why, but she's on a hunt for something that only thrift stores have. And if there is a place on the planet that I ask God I don't have to go to, it is a thrift store. Thrift stores are just glorified garage sales. That's all they are. It's a retail garage sale. That's all it is. It's junk. And I understand she finds stuff and every once in a while I find something. But you know what? She knows I love her if I go in there and if I sit in the car, I'm waning. You know, you going in, sweetie, I'll watch out and make sure nothing happens out here. So we're going down the street and I'm supposed to be watching for thrift stores and off to the side it says Christian Hospitality Thrift Store. I thought, well, finally, there's a Christian hospitality thrift store. This is going to be great. And it was a dump. But I thought, you know what? Sometimes there's deals and dumps. She wants to go in. Kids, y'all stay. We'll let mama go in. You know, we're not all going in there. She gets out, goes to the door, and it's got some stuff written on the door and people coming in and out. And she's in there a little while. I thought, she's coming out. Something happened. You know, there's more junk in there than that. She can't come out that fast. She gets in there. And as it turns out, the lady that runs the place grabs her and says, you know, speaks to her, you know, God bless you. And did you see our sign at the door? Takes her outside the store, shows her the sign that says proper attire required. And my wife was dressed and had blue jeans on. And this woman proceeds to tell my wife that the church has grown lukewarm. And because my wife went into that hole-in-the-wall thrift store in blue jeans, she threw her out of the store. Now, let me tell you something. That is whacked. Now, you're laughing and clapping, but I'm going to tell you something. That's a thrift store. And that lady may be confused and well-meaning. And Rebecca proceeded to say, and she said, you know, the lady said something about the gospel. And Rebecca went back and said, I'll tell you what the gospel is. Jesus died, was buried, and raised from the dead. And he doesn't care anything about what you have on. It's about what's in your heart. And then security carried her out, and it was all okay after that. Now, why do I even bring this up? We've lost our minds, but there are churches today, white churches, black churches, Hispanic churches, called churches. And you know what? There's no oxen eating out of any trough and crapping anywhere. They clean the place out. We got no problems. We got nobody that doesn't do it just like us, that doesn't wear what we wear and do what we do. We got a clean crib now, just like we want it. And you know what? They're going to die that way. This ought to be a mess that has to be cleaned up day after day, week after week, because something's going on. This isn't about keeping it clean. That's God's problem. This is about working in people's hearts and lives and asking God to change them. And you know what? People get in trouble and they'll make it maybe 3-4 years and then fall off a wagon or whatever they've been riding and been okay. And then they're in trouble and it gets messy and you got to go looking for them and waiting on them and praying for them. And you say, you know what, God, send those people to another church. And maybe I've shared this too many times, but I literally get these phone calls. People call and say, I met this person and I'm going to send them to your church because we don't have oxen in our crib, but you got nothing but trouble down there. And you know what? And these people go to church. They're genuinely concerned about this person, but they've met someone who doesn't fit in their stalls. So they're going to dump them on us. You know, number one, bring it on, send them down here. But then I go back at them and say, you know what? What are you doing in a church that you can't take these people to your own church, for God's sake? I could care less what you wear in here. There are some churches, you know what, from time to time we get any number throughout the years, we've got any number of strippers who show up at our church. They're hurting. And some of them make it okay for a while. And if you were making $1,000 a day, you might end up going back to stripping. Are we going to shoot them? No, they're struggling. They're going back and forth. But you know what? The strippers show up here more decently dressed sometimes than everybody else. But I don't care what you wear. It is about the heart. And even if you get all looking good and smelling good and all that fixed, you might be whitewashed tombstones. And unfortunately, what is called church out there is a beautiful building sometimes and filled with beautiful people. And it is a mess. You just can't see it because it's all covered up. I pray to God we never have anything but mess here. Wherever there are newborn babies, there's going to be crap. There's going to be mess. There's going to be diapers to change. And that's just the deal. So they're sweeping, they're shoveling, there's problems, and there is more on the way. And God, help us keep our eyes and ears open and welcome those people and say, you know what? We're a mess. We were a mess. But God's changing us. If he can change me, he can change you. Bring it on. Where no oxen are, the trough or the crib is clean. But much increase comes by the strength of an ox. The ox may make trouble, but there's no increase without the ox. Go to Luke chapter 2. The most famous crib in all of history. Look at Luke chapter 2, verse 7. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, in a crib, because there was no room for them in the inn. And verse 12, and this will be a sign to you, talking to the shepherds, you will find a babe wrapped in swaddling cloths, lying in a manger, in a crib. And the angel showed up in verse 16, and they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger in a crib. Interestingly enough, Jesse Jackson said this, we must not measure greatness from the mansion down, but from the manger up. Go over to John chapter 14. Something that struck me this week in going through all this, thinking about what a crib's used for. It's fascinating to me that the bread of life got started by being placed in a trough that was food for animals. And without Jesus, you know what? Every one of us is just an animal. And from the beginning, he was placed in a place that was used for food. The most expensive crib, the most famous crib is in Luke chapter 2 where Jesus laid. The most expensive crib of all time is you, if Christ lives in you. What did it cost God to buy a place to live for his son in you? It cost him his only son. Jesus gets born, placed in a crib, lives his life, dies on a cross, shed his blood, is buried, raised from the dead. And God did it all to buy himself a crib, you and me. But he can't squat. It's not a hostile takeover. He can't come in and kick the door down. You've got to let him in. And as Christians, we are God's crib. We are His dwelling place. Look at John chapter 14, beginning with verse 15. And Jesus writing here says, "If you love me, keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may abide with you forever, the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him, but you know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. I will not leave you orphans, I will come to you." The promise here, Jesus talking about the Holy Spirit coming, and the fact is that when he comes, he says, "For he dwells with you and will be in you." God, and this is something that seems no-brainer, but it is hard for people to grasp. If you've been a Christian a long, long time, you just assume, of course, God lives in me. If you have never experienced that, I had this week a lady who is here today. About a year ago, her boyfriend died. And her boyfriend came to this church and had come out of a pretty rough life and wasn't perfect by any means, but God began to change his life. It was drugs, it was just a mess, but he became a different man and impacted a lot of people's lives. And he had talked to her about this, invited her to church, and just for some reason it never came to pass. A year later, she is still grieving, calls and says, "Do you ever sit down and talk to people one-on-one?" Crying in the voicemail, "I need to talk to somebody." Came by the office, we sat down and talked and began to go through some of these things. And I asked her, I said, "You know, if you died, where would you go?" And she wasn't really sure. And I said, "You know, you could be, you can be." And long, long story short, I explained to her basically that God wanted to take up residence in her, that he could live in her and through her and forgive her. And sitting around a table in an office, a grown woman prayed a simple prayer and reached out the hands of her heart and accepted the gift of the forgiveness of sin and the gift of eternal life, and literally changed in a moment, and is not the same person. Now, she's a mess, was a mess, and may still have some messes that they'll have to clean up, but you know what? That's the deal. But God now lives in this woman and is not going to go away and is not going to leave her alone. No matter how bad she screws up, no matter how far she runs, he'll come after her. I got a buddy that's in this church right now who, as far as I know, is not in this room, a man that I love who is down right now. And I call and I pray, and you call and you pray, but you know what? You can't make somebody do something they're not going to do. And it is a mess. And I pray to God he gets back up and we'll be there to help him back up and finish the race. Because when God moves in your crib, he's not going away. It cost him too much to buy that house, to relinquish that house once he gets in. In that same John 14 and verse 19, he says, "A little while longer and the world will see me no more, but you will see me because I live, you will also live. At that day, you will know that I am in my Father and you in me and I in you." And then 1 Corinthians 3:16 says this, "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you?" If you're a Christian, Jesus has gone from being placed in his crib to having a permanent place in your crib. And he's not going away. And if that is not the case and that's not a fact about your life, it is as simple as this. As it happened to this lady this week and numbers of people, hundreds of people, millions of people through history. It is simple as reaching out the hands of your heart and saying, "God, you know what? Adam and Eve have the crib of cribs and they screwed it up by sinning. I've screwed my life up too, but I want you to come live in me and through me and change me. I confess my sin. I see that Jesus died on the cross, was buried and raised from the dead to provide me the forgiveness of my sin, that I might just simply receive as a gift eternal life itself. Come live in me, through me, change me, and help me begin to see and understand, though my life has been a mess and may be again, that you're here to make it new, to make it clean, to make it right. And you're not going to leave me. You're not going to forsake me. You're here to stay."
Thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We deeply appreciate you taking the time to be encouraged by Richard's unique way of challenging us to become more like Jesus every day. Here we are in the month of May, and we want to take a different kind of twist to these days. There's a common distress signal that is used for life-threatening emergencies where those who are facing dire circumstances declare, "Mayday, Mayday, Mayday," in hopes that someone will come to their rescue. Even though it's primarily used for aviators and mariners, we know that some of you are going through some really hard times. We want to be a part of your buddy system that will support you in prayer and encouragement to help your heart land safely. So let me encourage you to go to our website, richardellis.com, and click on the prayer link under the More tab at the top. You'll go directly to our prayer wall where you can share your prayer request and know that we will be praying for you. And for those who want to pray as well, can click on the Pray tab at the bottom of the request. Because of a faithful donor, we have a substantial matching gift where your contribution will be doubled right now. Help us by becoming a prayer partner and by contributing to this ministry. Someone may have been there in the past to help you during challenging times. Now it's your turn to partner up with those in need through prayer and support. Let's make this day a great day in someone else's life. Go to richardellis.com and support this mission today. That's richardellis.com. You can also send us your gift by calling 855-6-RICHARD, 855-6-RICHARD. Thank you. And until next time, thank you for listening. We look forward to coming alongside you again for more Richard Ellis Talks.